But what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Only hours after Russian and Syrian officials confirmed a ceasefire had been extended to Aleppo, opposition politicians said warplanes, either Syrian government or Russian, carried out a deadly airstrike on a refugee camp. This eyewitness to the airstrike says the brutal regime of the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad is a killer of women and children. He said, look here, as he pointed to the rubble. The refugees' camp is 30 kilometers from Aleppo near the border with Turkey. At least 30 were killed. London could be getting its first Muslim mayor. Sadiq Khan, representing the Labour Party, is a 45-year-old former government minister and son of Pakistani immigrants. He appears headed for victory in what British Muslims see as a turning point. In the field of 12 candidates, he was in a tight and often bitter race against the other front-runner, Conservative Zach Goldsmith, who is Jewish and the son of a billionaire tycoon. Race was overshadowed by allegations that Khan sympathized with an imam who British leaders, including Prime Minister David Cameron, have described as an Islamic extremist. Nigeria's Navy says militants attacked an offshore facility belonging to multinational petroleum company Chevron, the latest in a spate of attacks in the petroleum-rich Niger Delta region. The attack raises fears of renewed militancy in the Delta, which is, despite being home to most of Nigeria's oil wealth, does remain poor and underdeveloped. This is VOA News. Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu has announced he will be stepping down as his ruling AK Party announces an extraordinary Congress to elect a new leader. Davutoğlu's decision comes amid reports of his growing differences with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Dorian Jones is in Istanbul with details.
In a carefully worded statement to the country's media, Prime Minister Davutoğlu said he'll be stepping down at the AK Party Congress to be held on May the 22nd. Davutoğlu claimed his premiership has been a success, underlying his landslide victory in last November's election. But alluding to growing differences over his leadership, he said he was stepping down for the sake of unity and consensus in his party. But the Prime Minister was careful to reaffirm his loyalty to the President. I feel no reproach, anger or resentment against anyone, he said, adding, no one heard or will ever hear a single word from my mouth, from my tongue or my mind against our President. But in the past few months, there have been reports of growing differences between the Prime Minister and Erdogan. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
The U.S.-based Huahua Foundation says a prisoner held in China since the 1989 Tiananmen Square uprising may be released this October. Myonshon Daoshun was a 25-year-old factory worker at the time of the pro-democracy demonstrations and military crackdown. He was arrested, accused of arson for allegedly throwing a basket onto a burning tank. He's now 51 and in poor health and the last known person involved in Tiananmen still in jail. In U.S. politics, Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump campaigned in the state of West Virginia on Thursday, his first rally since rivals Ted Cruz and John Kasich suspended their campaigns for the White House.
It was between me and Hillary. And we really affectionately call her Crooked Hillary, right? Crooked Hillary.
He was talking about receiving the endorsement of a coal organization in West Virginia where he campaigned. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton spoke at a rally of mostly Hispanics at East Los Angeles College in the state of California.
Our next president has to meet three tests. Can you actually help families get ahead and stay ahead? Can you keep us safe? And can you bring our country together? Well, Donald Trump fails all three of those tests.
Hillary Clinton's only opponent, Bernie Sanders, has vowed to stay in the race for president and not to drop out, even though mathematically he cannot get enough delegates to beat Clinton. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's Supreme Court orders the Electoral Commission to clean up the voters' list.
We have gone to court with one objective, to ensure that as Ghana, we are able to have a voters' register that is credible, that does not have names of foreigners.
Evis Nimako is a farmer from Ghana's eastern region. Uganda's information minister says it is the court, not the government, that orders local media not to give live coverage to opposition leader Kizza Besigye's defiance campaign. And Gambia's main opposition appeals to the international community to help free its leader and other opposition members from government jails.
Our life is at stake, so as soon as possible, if the international community can assist us as soon as possible so that Mr. Dabo and others can be released. This year is election year. They can do anything with Mr. Dabo and others.
Mariam Seka is deputy president of Gambia's main opposition, United Democratic Party. Zimbabwe's central bank governor will explain the introduction of bond notes. Internally displaced people in South Sudan's Wau County get well-needed food aid. And Kenyan writers push boundaries with art form. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ghana's Electoral Commission has been ordered to immediately clean up the voters' list for this year's presidential, legislative, and local elections. The country's Supreme Court says the current list is not credible. Abu Ramadan of the Opposition People's National Convention, the PNC, and Evans Nimako, a farmer from Ghana's eastern region, petitioned the Supreme Court, saying the voters' list contains non-citizens and minors. Nimako tells reporter Peter Clotty that the main reason for taking the matter to the Supreme Court was to ensure the credibility of the upcoming election.
We have gone to court with one objective, to ensure that as Ghana, we are able to have a voters' register that is credible, that does not have names of foreigners, so that when it gets to the stage of Ghanaians voting, it is Ghanaians alone who are voting for their leadership. And on that note, we have gone to court to get the Supreme Court to give an order to the EC to give us a new register, and in alternative, a new register that has been validated. So today at court, the Supreme Court said that the EC must take immediate steps to delete names of all those who do not qualify to be on the register, and in addition, delete names of minors and people who have passed on. So today's ruling from the Supreme Court, I would say, is a victory for democracy.
Some people are saying that the Electoral Commission might not have the time to clean up the register ahead of the election. What are your views about that?
The Supreme Court was explicit. Take immediate steps to clean your register immediately. But we have given them a very simple option, and our option is validate. Let people who have their names on the register come validate as a way of getting themselves included in the register. And on this note, if you have registered with your whatever form of ID card, come in person now at all registration centers and say, my name is Evans Nimako. I am a Ghanaian and qualified to vote under the privileges given to me under our constitution.
Some people are expressing concern that with this ruling, there could be doubt about whether the election could be held on November 7 because of the timetable of the EC that has been spelled out. You think that is not justified? Why?
I don't think so. I don't think it's justified. Because when did the EC come up with its timelines? It came after we have gone to court. And if the EC was efficient and serious, they would have considered the verification of the things they were doing.
Your critics are saying that you and Abu Ramadan are just doing the bidding of the main opposition party, the New Patriotic Party.
Who said I'm doing the bid of NPP? Abu Ramadan belongs to the PNC. I am a farmer. That notwithstanding, I have a political interest. So I am entitled to pursue whatever idea I feel I can pursue to ensure that Ghana's democracy is well consolidated. If anybody thinks that what Evans is doing is against his or her interest, it's solely the preserve of that person. And I can't change that person. But now what is important today is that the Supreme Court of Ghana has ordered the EC that you have to be serious, go and delete names of those who are not qualified to be on the register so that Ghana will go into an election with a credible register.
Evans Nimako is a farmer from Ghana's eastern region. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. The deputy president of Gambia's main opposition, United Democratic Party, the UDP, is appealing to the international community to assist the party in seeking the release of its leader, Usainu Dabo. Mariam Seka, who is also secretary general of the UDP, says the lives of all those who oppose President Yahya Jammeh are at stake. Mr. Dabo and 38 members of the opposition were arrested last month and charged with conspiracy to commit a felony for holding an extraordinary protest demanding political reforms. Yesterday, Thursday, a judge denied Mr. Dabo and the others bail. Seka says her party has no confidence in the Gambian judicial system because it answers mostly to President Jammeh.
Today, we are at the court, Mr. Dabo and others. They applied for this bail application, but it was totally rejected by the judge.
Did the judge give any reason why he rejected the application for bail?
I'm sure he has given reasons, but it's blatant that they have their own reasons so that Mr. Dabo and others cannot be bailed.
I mean, you know about Gambia. Does this happen all the time? Is it not possible for someone who is arrested for protesting to get a bail?
It's very unusual. They are entitled to bail.
Did you see Mr. Dabo, and how is he?
I saw him with his team.
Health-wise, is he doing okay?
He is not totally okay.
What do you mean?
I mean, he's not very okay.
So when is the next court date?
The next court case will be on Monday by 11 o'clock.
Do you have confidence in the court system that it will do the right thing?
We have no confidence in the court system because the court system is not an independent organ. So they are answerable to somewhere else. My party doesn't have confidence at all, definitely.
Mr. Dabo is in jail with other opposition people. They all of them come to court.
Mr. Dabo and his members of the executive and some grassroots supporters, they are the detainees, and they all came to court today.
What would you like for the international community to do on behalf of your party?
I would like the international community to assist us as soon as possible because there is no justice in this country. And what? Definitely, all of us, our life is at stake. So as soon as possible, if the international community can assist us as soon as possible so that Mr. Dabo and others can be released. This year is election year. They can do anything with Mr. Dabo and others.
Have you been contacted by any, say, human rights groups from the international community?
Not to my knowledge.
And yet there are supposed to be elections coming up in the Gambia.
The election will be December 1st this year. My party is worried. United Democratic Party is totally worried because our party leader is in detention. And this trial, we are not sure whether they will be out before election. And election, this is election year. Election will be on the 1st of December. So my party is worried because they can keep Mr. Dabo and some members of his executive till election is over. And that wouldn't be to our favor.
The other people who were jailed with Mr. Dabo, did you see them and are they doing okay?
They are not quite okay, just as the same as Mr. Dabo. Health-wise, they are not quite healthy anyway.
I spoke to the Minister of Information, Sherif Bojan, and he said that, well, you know, Mr. Dabo and the others have to blame themselves because they violated a police order which said that in order to demonstrate, you must have a permit.
Mr. Dabo, he's a legal man. He knows what is right, and he knows the Constitution. Mr. Dabo didn't just go out like that. There was a team on Thursday reporting who went out, and that team was also arrested. Because of those people, that's why Mr. Dabo went out, this is some members of his executive. He knows the Constitution. He doesn't violate any rule.
Mariam Seka is the deputy president of Gambia's main opposition, United Democratic Party. She was speaking with me from the capital, Banjul. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Friday, May 6th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The Ugandan government is denying that it directly ordered local journalists from reporting on the activities of former opposition presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC. Minister of Information, Jim Munwezi, announced on Thursday that any journalists reporting on the activities of the FDC will lose their licenses and could be subject to arrest. Now, Munwezi says the government was simply relaying the Ugandan Constitutional Court's order stopping Dr. Besigye's defiance campaign. Munwezi says every time that Dr. Besigye's defiance campaign is covered live in the media, Dr. Besigye is in violation of the court order.
No, it is not true. Dr. Besigye can still be covered by the media. It is not true that he has been banned from being covered by the media.
But did your government make any announcement about coverage pertaining to Dr. Besigye?
Yes, the government announced the effect of a court order issued by the Constitutional Court stopping the activities of defiance campaign announced by Dr. Kizza Besigye, and in particular, stopping the live coverage of Dr. Kizza Besigye, because when he is covered live, he continues to defy the court order.
I don't know, Mr. Minister, wouldn't this be a misuse of court power? Because one would think that the court would be supporting people's right to demonstrate, to get out there and protest. So then the court now is saying the media should not cover somebody who goes out to protest.
No, government went to court petitioning court to confirm whether Dr. Kizza Besigye is not being on the wrong side of the law by his defiance campaign. And the court fixed a date for the hearing of the case. But in the meantime, they gave an interim order halting any activity of that defiance campaign. And we were informing the media that they are supposed to respect that court order which stops any continuation of the defiance campaign. And when they give live coverage of Dr. Besigye, he continues to defy that interim court order. That is all.
Retired Major General Jim Munwezi is Uganda's Minister of Information and National Guidance. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Zimbabwe's central bank governor, John Mangudya, has dismissed as untrue reports that the Bank of Zimbabwe's plan to introduce so-called bond notes is an attempt to bring back the defunct local dollar, which caused historic hyperinflation between 2000 and 2008 before the country adopted multiple currencies. Zimbabwe is currently facing serious cash problems that have forced the central bank to introduce the bond set to be equivalent to the United States dollar. Mangudya says the country is not planning to reintroduce the Zimbabwe dollar.
It's your way of blessing. The issue about the cash shortages in Zimbabwe is in some banks, not in all banks, in some banks, is attributable, as we said, to three factors. The first one is that the U.S. dollar has become very strong, and we have seen a shift from the usage of other currencies to using the U.S. dollar. So it means that we now have what you call concentration risk. We are concentrating on one currency, and that is against the spirit of a multi-currency system. So obviously our intervention should deal with the spreading of the demand from one currency to the other currencies in the multi-currency system.
So what it also means is that the government cannot print anything that is above 200 million, right?
That's exactly what I was saying. If something is begged, it means you can bring more. In fact, you're going to bring more than that. Because if you look at the Zimbabwean exports, right now, between now and December, for example, we are talking about maybe $2 billion, and that's 5% of 200 is about what, 100 million? Then the money, this is ensure that the liquidity situation in Zimbabwe, the nostrils are also funded. Money from the nostril will then fund this notes.
And there are some who are saying, well, what the central bank chief has done is to reintroduce the Zimbabwean dollar. What would be your response to that?
My response is very simple, is that the taste of the pudding is the eating, number one. Number two, when we did the bond coins, they said the same thing. So it's not a surprise. And therefore, and third one is that we sympathize with their thinking process. It's because they are living in the past in history, where in the thing that because we went through the hyperinflation, and that any person who try to do help them, they might not think that they want to do the similar thing. So, end of the day. So, what I'm saying is that we sympathize with them. They're living in the past.
That was Zimbabwe Central Bank Governor John Mandugwa speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe program. The Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan is distributing food aid to hundreds of vulnerable internally displaced persons in the newly created Wau state. The IDPs fled Wau when violence broke out between an armed group and government forces nearly 4 months ago. As Demo Silva Aurelia reports for VOA from Wau, the IDPs have not had access to humanitarian assistance for the past 3 months.
300 households of internally displaced persons living in and around Wau town received food donations from the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan. Most of the IDPs the church has selected to help are either disabled, elderly, breastfeeding mothers, or widows. They received maize flour, lentils, oil, and salt today. Since fleeing homes more than 3 months ago, a majority of the IDPs have been living with relatives or friends in and around Wau town, while others have been staying in open areas, including school and church compounds and health centers. Lucia Ilario, a mother of five whose husband was killed when fighting broke out in the area, was among the IDPs who received food aid today. Speaking in Arabic, Ilario says, for the last couple of months, she has found it increasingly difficult to feed her children. Hilario says she never knew today she would get flour, lentils, and oil. She says this has made her so happy and thank Jesus Christ for bringing peace so that she can live. 75-year-old Carlo Marjan is speaking in Arabic, says for the last 3 months he ate so little that he developed health problems.
I thank the church and God for making me alive. I'm glad to the priest for giving me food to eat. I have stayed for 3 months without food, weak and suffered from diarrhea my eyes cannot see.
Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan officials admit the food aid they are distributing is insufficient, but say it will enable the IDPs to live as they await more food assistance from other aid agencies, including the United Nations World Food Program. Reverend Samuel Mabith Mabior is in charge of food distribution at the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan.
We feel that we need to help. So the little that we have, we need to share with our community and also with the elders who are not actually able to work and also those who are not support themselves.
Officials say there are some 96,000 IDPs living in Wau State. For VOA News, I am Demo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
In Kenya, poetry and the spoken word have become a popular means for addressing everything from love to political violence. Lenny Ruvaga in Nairobi reports from the monthly open mic night at the Kwani Trust, a 13-year-old literary network that brings together some of the brightest voices on the continent.
By day, 24-year-old Sam Muremi is the quintessential entrepreneur. He and his sister run a bakery out of their home. He mixes the flour and baking powder to make a thick paste. But pastries are not his only passion. He writes poems during his breaks. And by night, he takes to the stage under his alter ego, X.
Ubuntu, you are here in this box, this reality. It has become your ball and chain.
Muremi has been performing his verses around Nairobi for the past 4 years. It's an art form known here as floetry, poetry with rhythm. Muremi tackles love and politics.
Poetry transcends boundaries because the human experience is the same, different variations. And poetry captures these variations and is what is used to connect us as a people.
There are now open mic nights around Nairobi for floets like Muremi. Ayub Kairigo, who goes by the moniker Flo Flani, has been a poet for more than 5 years.
The drum rolls are calling me home. The drum rolls are calling me home. See, I wanna pack my bags and go back in time. Sometimes I come out and the stars are bright. It's I in my truest form under God's chandelier. In my mind, I go back in time when we sat around the fireplace with Buka and Shosho, the college of knowledge.
Fans say they love the performer's no-holds-barred approach.
No topic is off-limit. You can say anything from sexuality. You can tell anything from political, anything from social justice, anything cultural. You can say it. There's nothing that's limited in poetry.
The Kwani Trust hosts this monthly open mic night. Acclaimed Kenyan writer Binyavanga Wainaina was a founder of the Kwani Trust in 2003. It has since drawn other contemporary literary giants like Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. The group's goal is to develop writers and give them a creative space to present and publish work. The open mic nights are a chance to explore and challenge society. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. 8 countries, Liberia, Madagascar, Malawi, Namibia, Sudan, Swaziland, Tanzania and Zimbabwe, are jointly Africa's most improved nations on the FIFA rankings. According to the latest rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday, Mauritania has slipped by the widest margin among African countries. Placed 33rd in the world, Algeria's Desert Fox are Africa's highest-ranked team. African champions Ivory Coast are 34th, Ghana is 38th, Senegal 43rd, and Egypt are 44th. Cape Verde Islands and Tunisia are jointly 47th. The Democratic Republic of Congo is 51st, Guinea 58th, and the Republic of Congo 59th. Meanwhile, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel play Gabon's Munana as Libya's El Ahli Tripoli face Egypt's Misri Makassa in Orange Africa Confederations Cup action today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Algeria's MO Bejaia meet Tunisia's Esperance. Tanzania's Young Africans face Angola's Sagrada Esperanca. Mali's Stade Malien engage Morocco's FUS Rabat. Sudan's El Merrekh play Morocco's Kwa Kab. And South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns play Ghana's Mediama. On Sunday, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe is at home to Tunisia's Stade Gabesian. Turning to athletics, world champion Asbel Kiprop starts as favorite to win the 1500 meters at the start of the IAAF Diamond League in Doha, Qatar today, Friday. Fellow Kenyans Silas Kiplagat and Elijah Manangoi are expected to be his main challengers. Botswana's Isaac Makwala runs the 400 meters. South Africa's Antonio Alcana competes in 110-meter hurdles as Ezekiel Kemboi runs the 3,000-meter steeplechase. The Ivory Coast duo of Muriel Ahore and Jose Marie Talou sprint in the women's 100 meters, South Africa's Wenda Nell contests the women's 400 meter hurdles as Kenyan Yuni Sum and South African Caster Semenya are entered for women's 800 meters. Ethiopian Almaz Ayana is a front runner in the women's 3000 meters where she faces Kenyans Vivian Cheruiyot and Mercy Chirono. On the infield, South Africans Victor Hogan and Sunet Fulyun compete in the men's discus and women's javelin, respectively. Finally, the Africa Weightlifting Championship starts in Yaounde, Cameroon today, Friday. It's a qualifier for the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, May 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, boxing. Is it barbaric or a great sport? We'll be right back. Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing boxing. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.